Okay, John's with me now. John, good morning.
Hello, Greg. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, but you got hacked, which has caused problems. What's going on?
Yeah, so basically, I noticed on my Facebook on Monday evening, tried to go on my phone and have a wee check through, and I couldn't get access, couldn't get through. Tried to log back in, and it wasn't letting me. So, obviously, I was hacked or something. Something went wrong. Checked my email, and I had problems with my Hotmail account. So, looked in, my Hotmail was hacked, Facebook and Netflix was hacked, and I'm having massive problems trying to get my Facebook account back up and running. My Netflix, there was no problem at all getting it running. I've spoke to PayPal to double check everything's good with that. My email, I've checked. You can see a log of what locations is trying to be logging onto your email, basically. Mm. And that's shown as like Brazil, Thailand, all over the world in the space of that day. Like, you know, I've since obviously changed passwords and put on two-step authentication.
So you've got control back of your email account, which is great. Netflix and others, you've dealt with them. They've worked with you. That's all sorted. The problem now is Facebook.
Yes. So since Monday, I've been trying to go through what they show you online. So you try to log in, it won't let you log in. I've tried it on the computer, tried it on the phone. It's saying basically your account has been suspended. It may be through something you've posted, or it may be through you've been hacked, basically. Mm-hmm. It won't let you log in, so you can't get into anything to basically get back to them. All it's taking you is to a help center. So when you go to the help center, any of the options that it's supplying aren't relevant, or there's nothing you can do, basically. In the meantime, I've been trying to get numbers to get in contact with Facebook directly. There's a few different places on Facebook where I've got the one number for Dublin, for Meta. Obviously, Meta owns Facebook, or is the name of it now. So this one number I struggled to get through. I got through on Tuesday, and basically they said to look into it, but they says if this doesn't work, you have an option of paying €250 and we will get you up and running straight away. And basically my thing was, obviously I've been hacked, I don't see why you should have to pay that kind of a money just to flick a switch, basically. So since that, I've been trying to get back to them. I've given them emails as well, and they say they can't help me, and the only method is to pay the $250. They say they can't verify that I've been hacked, and I've said I'm willing to supply information showing my email, the different places that have accessed it, and to show the communication between other firms to show that they can see I've been hacked, it's been resolved. I've been willing to send my ID to prove it's me. I have access to the email that's associated with Facebook, so I can verify that, but they won't actually do anything.
I'm interested in all of it, but my interest is particularly piqued at this €250 charge. So it's as if you pony up €250, all of a sudden they believe you. I've never heard tell of this at all. So they're saying if you pay €250, we'll resolve this immediately.
Exactly, which is shocking. And basically what they're saying is if you pay that, we will give you, I think it's the blue tick, they call it, or the verification, yeah. And what I've said to them in one of my emails to them is, basically, so you're not willing to take my ID to verify, which most places, if you had like a passport or a driver's license proving it's you, you would assume that that's verification. They won't take that, but yes, if you pay them €250, they will. And what they said to me is, but what we will do is we will give you up to €150 worth of ads, as in if you were advertising anything, free. So that's their sales pitch. When I says I wasn't happy about that today, on my last call with them, they hung up.
They're a law unto themselves. They can do whatever they want.
Shocking. And what's shocking is, like most users, you know, you have it in your phone or whatever. Everybody, you're connected. You've all your groups. You'll be chatting. Yeah. You're sending images. You have your, you know, me personally, there's images on my Facebook account of relatives that are no longer here and things like that. So it's a very personal thing. It's bad enough being hacked. But the fact is, this company that we're putting all our trust into, and we're thinking it's great. Everybody uses it, and when it comes to something that is quite simple, you know, they're saying that they can fix it, but basically you have a 250 quid fee, and you know we're not accept. They're basically saying we're not accepting that we can see you've been hacked, even though you've got the proof of it. Basically,
yeah. You know? Is there any activity on your Facebook page? Like those who may have control of it, are they using or abusing it?
So Facebook has took it completely offline. So Facebook, people have tried to get on to see my account and you can't see it. So it's not even there.
Wow.
So even if I pay this, my worry is if you paid it, maybe the stuff's even gone. Maybe Facebook, who's to say that they have not deleted it now? Because of obviously maybe the person that hacked it have put up whatever or did whatever and Facebook's wiped it all. So I could find myself in a position paying this money and the important information to me has been wiped.
Yeah. Right. I still don't get where this €250 is coming from, because Facebook verification is around about £8 a month. You know what I mean? It's not 250. It's not a one-off payment of 250. I'm not saying you should do that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to figure out where they pulled this €250 from with €150 free ads that you don't want.
Exactly. It seems to me like a kind of a business scheme to make money. Because even if it was if it was the €8, for example, you could do it for a month and be, you know, cancel it, you're up and running, you know. But then maybe that's what they found people were doing, so they're trying to maximize, you know, people that they have you basically that you've you know, I can't see no other option at the minute.
They can't exploit your difficult situation. If they can go through a process to verify your identity with your passport or whatever, I can see what they're trying to do here, and then they can re-enable your account because you're a verified user. The best practice would for them to be is to go through that process at no charge to you, because they're prepared to make sure it's you and give you your account if you pay, but if you don't, they won't. That's bad business. It's not bad business. It's just nasty.
Yeah, it feels like because you're that invested in their ecosystem. I mean, I've been a Facebook user for at least 10 years, I don't know exactly, but you're that invested in it that you feel like, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, what's my options? You know, it's very frustrating. And the fact that all there online, it's a block wall. When you're trying to do things and go to things, it's you can't get into it. You have to be logged in. And even then, I'm sure it's awkward enough anyways. So basically, you have to try multiple times to get this number in Dublin. So eventually you get through and, you know, you're still getting nowhere. Like,
what about,
you know,
John, what about sort of going through the verification process yourself? At the $13.99 per month, getting access to your account. See if you can get access to your account in that process, right? And then cancel it on the buggers.
Well, so I'm guessing I can't do that because I can't even log in.
I'll get you right.
This is the problem. They've disabled the account, so I can't even log in to do anything. So it's literally a block wall.
You have to be logged in to start the verification process then.
Exactly. So I can't. So I can't see any of my information to download it, even to, you know, to try and without getting back
well,
in
I'm
to,
seeing
to
it
try
here.
And
it
like,
says click here to verify, and it takes you to the login page. So you're banjaxed because you can't log in there, right? Well, listen. What we'll do is we'll get on to them. A lot of these organisations, Facebook, X, sorry, Meta, more they don't engage really with the press because they don't care. They've got such a dominance. That they simply don't care. But we're going to try to see if it makes any difference at all, John. Maybe we might make contact with someone that might take an interest in this. But I think it's the fact that they can do it if you pay, but they can't do it if you don't. And you got through to a human to have this conversation. It's very, very unsavory, like, especially considering that, A, you've got your network there, but also, two, you've got images of a strong sentimental value there.
Exactly. And just to remind listeners that, you know, I had what I consider a strong password, but probably shared it with multiple accounts, as opposed to having different ones for each account. And maybe, I don't know why I was hacked, but maybe that's, you know, some they've got in somewhere. Mm. And I mean, you think you're secure, and in an instant, you know, it can all be, somebody can get in and cause so much damage. Like,
all right, okay. Listen, I hope you get sorted. Will you keep us updated? A caller says, I'm having the same issue with Facebook. I've emailed and rang everywhere, and nobody's getting back to me. I then went through the Freedom of Information Act and got sorted. Maybe John should try the same. I'm now building a case against Facebook. Everything that I've received has been from AI. I've lost contacts and photos due to this. I'm not sure I would go to that level, but fair play to this caller. If we can get more information on that, we'll pass it on to you. But for now, John, thank you very much indeed. And we say good morning now to Rosa Glacken, president of the St. Vincent de Paul Conference in Donegal. Rosa, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having
your time.
Me.
I suppose before we talk about those that we encourage to use the services and those that are using the service, we did recently have the budget announcement. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that have a positive impact on those that might be inclined to use your services?
Oh, very much so, Greg. Yes, indeed. All these double payments and grants made a huge difference. And most of our conferences are reporting that things are quieter, have been quieter for quite some time. But the society overall expresses concern that these were short-term measures. And we did ask, you know, that they would look at maybe increasing weekly benefits and so on, where people could budget and manage their accounts themselves. So what happens come January when the bills start rolling in and these payments are finished? So we would have concerns in that area.
That there could be a almost a tsunami of people seeking help as that money runs out. Okay.
That's true.
But that being said, for the short term running into Christmas, it is good to see that it mm-hmm. seems those particularly on benefits mm-hmm. are needing your resources less. That being said, some would say very little there for the working family, the squeezed middle, so to speak. And I think that's really the focus of our convo, to reach those people.
Mm-hmm. Very much, Greg, very dear to my heart, reaching out to people, as you say, who are in employment, not in receipt of a lot of these budgetary measures or other bonuses and so on. These are people who maybe have a mortgage or are paying high rent, income, you know, just about stretches. pardon me, they feel perhaps because they're working that they shouldn't approach us. So I would be very much appealing to those people, please come to us, we can help.
Because those people too that you talk of, sometimes one-off expenses come along.
Correct.
And it can mm-hmm. leave them in a very, maybe the car, they can't yes. afford to fix the car or yes. something along those lines.
Yes.
So SVP can help those people.
Oh, very much so. And you mentioned car. We have such a poor infrastructure that people, particularly in rural parts of Donegal, need their car for their place of work or for transport for children and so on. And as you say, if the car breaks down, if a washing machine breaks down, that's a major problem because, you know, they haven't much to spare. And they haven't the opportunity much to put money aside. So an emergency arises. So I would appeal particularly to those people, please come to us. Remember, it's confidential and we will treat them with dignity and respect, but do come to us and we can help.
Can I talk a little bit about how that works? So I'm working, I'm as described, you know, my money really either runs out the day I'm paid or in the days in advance, and I have no fat in the bone to deal with a crisis and an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So I reach out to St. Vincent de Paul. What happens next?
You contact us, then two members will come to visit and sit down and discuss your situation and see how best we can help. Now, in most instances, it's maybe a shortfall in the weekly budget for food and fuel. So they're the main areas that we would help with. But also other emergencies arise around sickness, which I've mentioned before, where people have to travel for treatment. There are students, people who have students in third level, big problem, and we do our best to help there. and, as you say, other emergencies arise. So we sit down and discuss that, how best we may help. It's usually short term, get them over that hump, and they're usually very glad that they have contacted us.
I've spoken to people in the past, and this is more about, I think, the person that may be considering calling and not St. Vincent de Paul, but I want to address it in that they're concerned. They might be very proud people, okay? And they're concerned mm-hmm. that if they reach out, it could be, you know, friends or neighbours that might call round to the house mm-hmm. to discuss their financial situation. You referenced that we're a rural area, okay? So mm-hmm. sometimes everyone knows everyone.
True.
What would your assurance be or reassurance be to those people who might not pick up the phone for that reason?
Well, yes, but that can happen, as you say, particularly in rural areas. So if they feel that, you know, they would know the people calling and why they would be calling, we might arrange to meet somebody in another location that would be private and, you know, keep everything as confidential as possible and reassure them in that way.
Yeah, because you said about people should come forward, but they might not because they're working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people very well could have previously donated to St. Vincent de Paul.
Absolutely.
Or perhaps they can do so in the future. Mm-hmm. We are a community, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful mm-hmm. organisation, and it's about helping people when they might need mm-hmm. it. And who's to say what we can return into the future? There's no obligation, but my point is that none of us ever know when we might be in that situation.
That is very true. And in fact, people have come to us and said, yes, I donated in the past, but now I need your help. And that's just wonderful that they can come to us with that confidence.
Okay. There's also an issue with people, probably with the best of intentions, but dumping unusable stuff at the doors of mm-hmm. St. Vincent de Paul, black bags, and I can imagine mm-hmm. everything that's in there. There's a lot of an issue with that. Firstly, it all has to be gone through.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it might not be the most hygienic, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if it's not usable, it has to be dumped. And that's a strain on the resources of SVP. So what's happening there? And have we seen an increase in it?
Yes, there's a big increase in people. Generally speaking, people are wonderful. Donations are terrific. And as you know, the shops are a major source of income for us. But people of late are dumping, as you say, more and more broken toys and, say, buggies that can't be cleaned up and sold on. And they tell me in the shops that the cost of recycling and getting rid of that has tripled.
Wow.
So if people would just remember that, you know, we're depending on that. So it's taking from our resources to help people who need us. And, you know, we would appeal that they would be careful about what they donate.
Do you want people to donate then? Because this is it's an amazing revenue stream for SVP and allows it to do much of the work that we're talking mm-hmm. of. So if people are having a clear out or want to help, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily have the money to help, but want to help. Mm-hmm. So what kind of items are very welcomed?
Oh, very welcome are clothing. And it doesn't always have to be clothing in excellent condition, because we do recycle anything that can't be sold. Clothing, bric-a-brac, very popular. Books, CDs, anything like that is handbags, ladies' hats and so on, and scarves, that sort of thing.
So you don't want my handbag?
If it's the right colour, it might do.
Okay.
But these do very, very well.
Yeah.
And as you say, that it's a huge source of income. Without our shops, we wouldn't manage at all.
Yeah. Okay, and it's a way for people to give, mm-hmm. even if they don't necessarily have the money, and help out. And I can imagine the kind of stuff, a nice lamp, stuff that would look nice in a shop that you're no longer using, because a lot of good stuff ends up in a skip or in the tip, and
very
it shouldn't,
true.
Should it?
Yeah,
should go true. To those. But that being said, and I think people would know, if we employ our common sense, it is not helpful to donate stuff that's broken beyond repair or mm-hmm. can't be brought up to a usable standard, because the staff are having to put in an awful lot of effort to filter through that stuff as well. But there is also a cost to get rid of a lot of that stuff. And I don't think anyone would knowingly want to take away from SVP resources to that end. So the two messages here, keep giving, either financially or indeed donating to the shops, mm-hmm. and also if you're struggling and even if you're working, and we can all be quite proud at times, can't we?
Absolutely.
SVP is there and all the people associated with it are there, and for, there for one reason only. Well, the primary reason is to help other people.
Absolutely. And just to remind people, our national collection is the weekend of the 7th and 8th, which is at our churches. But if people want to donate, a lot more people now are donating online.
Yeah.
And they can click on Northwest and the area they want.
Okay, anything you want to add, Rosa?
Just again to thank the public for their generosity and kindness, and to thank your good selves for your continued support.
Well, that's a by the by, but okay, I do appreciate it nonetheless. Rosa, keep up the amazing work that you do and all of the team do right across the county and country with St. Vincent de Paul. And it's one of those things where you just batter away, you know, and you just help people and you make big differences in people's lives, and we don't hear about it necessarily because it's a private individual thing, but we know the fantastic work that you're doing right across the board and we really appreciate it. Rosa, thank you so much as always
for calling in to us.
That is Rosa Glacken there, who is President of St. Vincent de Paul Conference in Donegal. Bye-bye, Rosa. Some comments here. Highland Radio is great coverage. Love listening to John McAteer. Thanks. You know, I'm here too. Anyway, I'm only joking. We get 5 polling cards every year. There are 2 of us currently living at home. Our family have since moved abroad and to other parts of Ireland. These cards will now show up as a no-show. These will be wasted votes. But those living elsewhere should really log on to click the register or check the register and change their address, really, you know, because we can't expect the system to be able to track us like that there, can we? We'd have to tell it where we are. Why are RTE or any other candidates not mentioning European farm protests? Irish people feel the same and it's not being talked about. We're coming up to an election, so this is a vital time for farmers. I live in Mayville. This is in relation to polling cards. I separated 32 years ago. I live in another house. At every election, I get a polling card for her. I've contacted the register about 6 to 7 times, but it still happens. It's very annoying. It feels to me like something open to abuse, because if you have 2 cards, technically, you could vote twice. Did you see Paddy Power's odds? 150 to 1 for a candidate who has a fighting chance for the last seat. Is this in Donegal? No, I didn't. But I would certainly lump on it. I don't know who it is. Let me know who it is. I'm not going on to their website. But if you can let me know, because I simply don't have time. I hope everyone affected by defective concrete don't vote for government parties tomorrow. I mean the parents and relatives of people affected. I know someone who's waiting on their house to be demolished, and he said his parents will vote to keep this party in power. Like, how stupid is that? This is why Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael are always in power, because our parents won't look at the facts. They live in the past. Give it another 10 to 15 years, this country will change, because the elderly and guaranteed votes will no longer be about. That being said, we just heard from Rosa Glacken there, who talked about those on benefits making less contacts with St. Vincent de Paul now because of the measures that were introduced. So, like, I know people might go, well, how could you do that? Well, if you're one of those people, you might say, well, would another party do that? Or would another government do that? That's going to get me through Christmas in a better position. And that is, you know, sometimes we can be so focused on one issue that maybe we can't see that other people see other issues. And listen, that's borne out in the opinion polls and probably will be in the election tomorrow. Okay, Kilgar, sorry for holding you. Thanks for your time. Good morning to you.
How are you doing, Greg? How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm kind of glad to speak to you on this because, you know, I think the more people adapt to smart meters, the more types of products we're about to talk about that people might use at night, they're being encouraged to use at night because of discounted electricity. It's something I wouldn't do. Now, I'm not saying you used it at night, but anyway, tell us the story and my comment there will start becoming a bit more understandable.
Well, number one, I never put the tumble dryer on at night. Never would, because... But I start the story with 2 weeks ago, it was actually my wife. I was on Rita. She was telling me about something she had seen on the TV about tumble dryers and about the company not accepting responsibility. They were going on fire. So 2 days ago, and it was at lunchtime. I know exactly the time because I phoned the fire brigades 2 minutes afterwards. At 1:45, I was having lunch. Rita and myself were sitting at the table. I had taken clothes out about a minute before that out of the washing machine. put them in the tumble dryer, switched on the tumble dryer. I came out, I sat down, I was having my lunch. And I don't know why, maybe me because I'm odd, but I thought, God, that doesn't seem to be going. So I went straight in. Now, we're only talking minutes here. I went straight in, I opened the door, and this, you know, like electrical smell, smoke.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from, it came out at me, and I closed the door, and then I opened it again. They pulled all the clothes out, which were still all wet, obviously. And I could see, like, yellow smoke behind the grill of the tumble dryer. So I closed it again. And then I went and I phoned the fire brigade, who were up here very, very quickly. And the fire had gone out when I closed the door again, in the back of it now. That's thanks be to God. So the guys arrived up, and they took the... fantastic, I have to say. There was no damage done to the house because I was so quick. You know, it was just the tumble dryer.
And also, too, you would be careful, wouldn't you, in terms of, you know, the lint filter and that type of stuff. So you would have taken precautionary measures prior to this.
Absolutely. I can tell you now, sometimes the wife says I'm over the top, but I always, after every cycle that we use the tumble dryer, the lint comes out, it's water, it's condensing when the water comes out, and then once a month there's another big filter in there that I would clean out.
Mm.
So I do that, and I do it, we both do it every time we do it. And now the machine is, it's 4 years old, not that old, you know.
No.
So basically it just happens so quick. And I mean, I could have been, normally I would go in and I would put on the tumble dryer. I do use it during the day, but I normally wouldn't be out in the kitchen all the time.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it was just pure chance.
And without your intervention, Kilgore, you're pretty confident that very quickly the fire would have taken hold.
Oh, I know, just from the back of the thing, I could see the flames.
Wow.
You know, and it's in a unit. You know, the machine's in the bottom, the tumble dryer's on the top.
Yes.
So, and there's cupboards up above that. I mean, it was just going to take off. You know, I don't know what would have happened. As I say, the guys in the fire brigade, they took it out the back, and we had it out the back, and they said sometimes a belt or something can go on it. You know,
yeah.
Like that, they did. Now, I phoned them, the hot point, who it was. I phoned them and told them. And they said, now, in fairness, they were very, very good on the phone. Mm. It's over to a call centre in England. And they said they would have somebody come out and look at it, you know. And they said, where is it? And I said, it's out the back. And they said, can you bring it in? And I said, I cannot bring it in. And they said, oh, you need to bring it inside, for the engineer won't look at it outside. And I said, I'm not bringing it in. For number one, I said, I'm too old, I couldn't lift it in. Number two, I've had a hip replacement and I can't lift anything. And I said, I can't bring it in. They said, oh, they hemmed and they had. And they said, we'll cover it up. And I said, okay,
I'll cover it up. Sorry, I'm not laughing. I can imagine this negotiation that you're going through about it. It's funny because I think, you know, even with washing machines and dishwashers as well, I've spoken to many experts in this area in the past. You kind of think because they're wet, and even clothes in a dryer are wet, you kind of don't associate it with fire. But unfortunately, you hear all too often. And yours is a very lucky escape, I think, firstly, down to your observation, but also your quick action.
Yeah, it was pure luck. It's as simple as that. We happened to be sitting, and as I say, just something. I just didn't think that it had stopped. I know they stop and they start and they stop and they start. They do the... But whatever it was, I just happened to go out. It was just pure chance and pure luck. But again, as I say, you know, fire brigade, so good, so quick out, and so helpful. I have to really say the guys, like, I would know the guys to see, but they were really good now.
Brilliant
but
stuff.
It comes back, you know, people really, really, particularly with tumble dryers, I know they said all electrical items, you know, are prone to it. But dear God, that was scary. And as I say, the amount of smoke... As I say, it may not have been the fire. If I hadn't got it, I think maybe the smoke would have done more damage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
to me or to whoever, because they said to me, you know, they checked us out and all to make sure that we were okay, you know.
All right, then. Listen, Kilgore, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it. And I'm glad everything resolved. It'll be interesting to see actually what Hot Points say. Let us know. Thanks so much, Kilgore. Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, of course, is very loyal. Fine Gael, supporter, very active in the party in this county. And Doreen, reacting to the opinion poll in the Tyrconnell Tribune, and it has Fine Gael arguably written off. You disagree?
Well, good morning, Greg. Nice to get an opinion here for Fine Gael, and I appreciate this call, but I think you have us dead and buried. I think that the particular poll, and good luck to John McAteer, you know, and he does good work in relation to issues in his paper. But I think the interpretation being given across the airways is that Fine Gael are dead and buried in Donegal, and we are not. We have two fine candidates who have worked very hard, I said, in the last number of months, I said, for the party. And as a part of government, we have a very steady economy. And I said, because of the good handling at senior level of the budget and of the money that we have looked after for the last number of years, along with Fianna Fáil. So I think we need to be very careful. The picture that's been portrayed over the airways in relation to this, these particular...
It's an opinion poll. That's the views of the public statistics. That were polled. They spoke to 850 people and less than 12% of them says they'd give Fine Gael a poll. That also plays out in TG Cahir polls and internal party polling.
Greg.
Go ahead.
Right, Greg. I'm on to give my opinion and let me give it. There is 12% there. There could be a difference of 3% there. And where is the seven that's mentioned at the bottom of the others? The transfers of the threes and fours are vital to us. We as a party have had a seat in government for Fine Gael in this county for since the start of the state. And through Joe McHugh, Denny McGinley, I said the late Paddy Hart, and I said Senator Joe O'Loughlin have been adequately represented at senior level and have delivered for the county, have delivered in projects from Malinhead as far as Kilkear, between projects of different types, between infrastructure, between football teams, between the Arklan and Guido Work, the Swan Park, the community centre in Letterkenny. Okay.
But Doreen,
we have delivered, and that's what we said we'd do.
Can I say one thing, though, and it's the elephant in the room. The person that you talk of that has been the figurehead of Fine Gael for many years now, a vote-getter, he left Fine Gael because of how the party treated Donegal. I'm not saying that. That's not my opinion. I'm not being biased. Your own man, Joe McHugh, left Fine Gael because of how he viewed your party treating Donegal. That's not... You can't say I'm being biased in saying that. I'm only observing a fact.
No, you are, but Joe McHugh has been working with us and has been working with our two candidates. And Joe McHugh has served his party well for the last 26 years. Mm-hmm. And he moved aside because he didn't get what he looked for in relation to the MICA issue. Mm-hmm. And if he couldn't get it as a member of government, and if Charity McConnell-Lowe couldn't get the 100%, do we really think that a candidate for the redress is going to be able to get it? We have worked very hard as a government and as councillors and as a Donegal County Council to move things along, and I think they're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It's a problem that's going to be there for the next 20 years anyway. But no, I will not let that be a criticism. Joe McHugh has not let us down. Joe McHugh has worked tirelessly
it's
for
not
us.
Me, so he left the party.
No, he left the party because they didn't deliver what he wanted. But that's to do with the Dublin level. I'm talking today about the Fine Gael vote in Donegal, and I want them to come out over this election and to show you and to show John McAteer. Because
show
you're not
me?
God,
what do you mean show me?
You're losing it.
What do you mean show me?
Because I just think you're giving the wrong angle on it when you're reading it, and I just think you need to be very careful, and you need not to be biased in relation
I'm
to
just reading,
what is being...
I am literally just... interviewing John on the findings of the poll, 850 people. That's what they said. I never said it. They said it.
Sorry, Greg,
I never left Fine Gael. Joe McHugh
morning.
Left Fine Gael. I
no,
didn't.
Greg, I'm going to quote what you said this morning and looking back to the cut. You have us in the opposition seat already, and the only votes cast would be the postal votes at this stage. So let's just see what happens, and let's see maybe about
Leo
Sunday
Varadkar,
evening how
Leo
we
Varadkar
are
said,
in relation.
Leo Varadkar at the last election said that he would favour Fine Gael in opposition to separate itself from Fianna Fáil and to build the party back to the great party it once was. That's Leo Varadkar, the leader of the party, not nobody Greg Hughes sitting in a seat in Letterkenny. I'm simply saying...
He was the leader of the party. He no longer is. He has moved aside because he listened to the people. And we now have a very good leader, and he's full of energy. And that's what our message is now in the incoming government. We are a party that's full of, we're energised because of the young people that are coming on board, the councillors, the senators, the different people who are going in there to replace the long-serving people that have served for the year.
Do you believe there was a united voice in Donegal to run two candidates in the general election? Do you think if the Fine Gael party members in Donegal had the choice, that's the strategy they would have employed?
It is the strategy that we as a strategy group and as an executive made.
Really?
And we stand by it.
So it was a decision. It was a decision made in Donegal to run two candidates and to select both John McNulty
and to divide the constituency the way we did. And our two candidates are working very well together under Seamus Langan, who's our director of elections, and have been more than accommodating to everything, and have looked after so many different areas within their campaign. Mm. We're covering a broad range of issues from fishing in the Gaeltacht areas to the islands to disability to young people and the concrete blocks as well. And I think a lot of media coverage has given the impression to the county that we don't care, and we do care, and we will continue to be there, mm-hmm. and we will continue to campaign until tomorrow night at 12 o'clock to the people that we know.
Just picking up something you said there, are you saying Joe McHugh was out canvassing with the candidates?
Yes, Joe McHugh has canvassed with our two people. And why wouldn't he canvass?
No, because he chose not to canvass during the council elections. I was just curious what changed between
them. That's his business, but I'm proud of the work that Joe McHugh has delivered for this county, and we're very proud of the work that he's done.
Well, I'm not questioning that. I'm just asking. That's okay.
Well, now, you see, because you're within a party, and we know different things than you know, and I just think, I suppose, maybe I feel at times that we're not portrayed as doing the things we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to put the spin of Fine Gael on this today and to make sure that you wouldn't be seen as a media thing that was giving a bias.
Well, I hope it helps, Doreen. I really do. I hope it does help.
I appreciate this call, and no doubt we will have a few rows over Saturday and Sunday. Fine. And looking forward to your coverage.
As I say, it might encourage people to come out and vote, or it might not. I don't know, Doreen. You never know with these things. Listen, thanks for your time as always. Doreen Sheridan Kennedy there, commenting on the Tyrconnell Tribune. Saturday the 30th of November, Michael and Mary Worski are going to switch on their Christmas lights display. It's an annual thing now, of course, and it's almost a signal that Christmas is right around the corner. Santa and Ollie are going to be switching the lights on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. There's carol singing from 7 p.m. Everyone's welcome. If you go along and witness this beautiful display and make a donation, as many people do generously, all proceeds go to Cancer Care West Donegal. And there's a wee place there for young ones to post their letters as well, too, if you haven't posted them already. By the way, also, if you want to win a car for Christmas, you can, because the Highland Radio Christmas car draw is well and truly up and running. So you can win a brand new Toyota Yaris Cross. It's worth over €30,000. All you have to do to enter the draw is go onto our website, buy a ticket, highlandradio.com, click on win a car. You can buy one ticket for 15 or get five for 50, and you can individually name those tickets if you want to gift them out. You can also call up to us here at the radio station and pay with cash if you want to in person, or you can give us a call on 07491 25000, and we'll process that for you. The draw takes place in this show on the 23rd of December. You can come up and sit in your car on the 23rd of December, but we're going to put it on new plates for you in January for you to drive, and you get the maximum bang for your buck there as well. There's going to be other sweeteners as we approach the 23rd, by the way. So get your tickets early, and it's not just the car you'll be in for. Let me put it to you like that. It's not just the car. Right, okay. Anne Gilday is a comedian and is on the show with us as she heads towards Donegal. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. How are you keeping?
I'm good, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. Right, you have a new show out, and it's, I suppose, something of a natural follow-on from your very popular Last Leg. So talk to us about the new show.
Okay, so I am coming to, isn't it?
on Green
to Letterkenny on the 14th of December. So that is actually, Greg, that is the last show of my old show.
Fantastic.
So I've been 3 years on the road with the show How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy It. And it is the very last show. I've I've been in England with it and in Europe and all over Ireland multiple times, and I played in Letterkenny in February, and it was such an amazing gig. The venue called up the next day and said, come back. So it's actually the last show and we're filming it.
Right,
and
so
it's in on Green on the 14th.
That's fantastic. Okay, so it's the last show of How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy. It's going to be filmed as well, and it's ahead of the 2025 tour called Further Adventures in Womaning. So how did you how did you come to I suppose put together How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy It? And tell us a little bit about the show.
Okay, so I was trying to write a show during lockdown about midlife, because I'm in my 50s. I know you can't believe it. And it was my partner who said, he wrote that on my whiteboard, How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy It. He went, that's your show. I went, who wants to hear about menopause? And then Greg, like so many women, I started reading up about it, and I thought, oh my God, I know nothing about my body, what's going on or anything. So I kind of went down the rabbit hole. I ended up actually going on HRT. I realized all the mysteries of that. And that's where the show came out of. It came out of kind of all I didn't know. And I've actually just, but Greg, I'm just back from England. I just spent 2 months touring everywhere in the UK in brilliant theatres with Dr. Louise Newson, who is a menopause doctor. So that was a whole other level of revelation about menopause. So I was doing comedy in her show, and we went everywhere from Plymouth to Inverness. That was amazing. So that's why I'm so delighted to be back now. Yeah, Donegal.
I think all the best comedy, obviously, is well written and what have you, and it has to be, and land at the right time and all that. But it also has to be, I think, from my perspective, the comedy I like, right, is stuff I can relate to. And not just the women themselves who are affected by this, but I understand a lot of partners are dragged along as well, because they will see, they as a couple then can sort of say, get the jokes, get the lines.
Greg, it's a very inclusive condition, menopause. You don't have to get it to suffer from it. Oh, yeah. And I have actually met husbands who brought their wives along as a surprise. Maybe hint, hint, maybe this is what's going on. But I've had amazing feedback from men. I had a lovely email from a man going, thank you so much for your show, because his wife had a real meltdown a couple of weeks after the show. And he went, I understood what was happening. Because, of course, there's a real serious side to menopause. And it's the thing that actually Louise Newson is really passionate about, too. It's the mental health and the disposition implications of what's going on in menopause and the way that that can affect women. And just to have some idea of what's going on in your body so that you have some methodology for addressing it.
For sure,
and I talk lightly, Greg, lightly and hilariously about that.
Of course, because that's how, because you reach some people that way. Everyone takes information in differently. And I'm sure there's been moments amongst your audience where there's a eureka moment. That's me. I understand now. Things make sense. I'm not just on my own. I thought that was just me. So I can see how it can reach the audience in that way, because you have to reach people in different ways sometimes.
Yeah, so it's kind of all funny. Like every line is a laugh, but it's just all the information is in there, and there's a lot of historical stuff and about why there's this attitude to HRT and to women's medicine in general now. And it just unfolds, the information unfolds without you thinking, oh, I'm getting information. And I always hear it in the intermission, the buzz from the audience and women chatting. It's been amazing. I've had the most amazing time for the last 3 years touring it. But like you said, I have a new show that I'm going to be doing from next year called Further Adventures in Womaning. That's about that show is more about the way things have changed from our mum's generation to now. Like I look back I actually have a huge bit in my new show about Housewife of the Year competition, that, and there's a new documentary out about that. And it's like how that whole piece has changed. And that show, Greg, came out of talking to women after this menopause show and just women sharing their experiences and their hilarious ignorance about...
All right, well, people have an opportunity, and it's one of the last opportunities, if not the last opportunity, to see this show. It is the last one, right? Okay,
it's on... Actually, Greg, can I say this? I'm in Derry the night before. I'm in Derry Playhouse on Friday the 13th. It's my first and last time in Derry with the show. And then the very end of the whole tour is going to be in Letterkenny and on Green on the 14th, and we're filming it.
Yeah, okay, so get your tickets. This is a show that has been... so widely praised, amazing reviews from all over the place. It clearly travels well. And why wouldn't it? Because it's a universal issue. And it's been a wonderful short period of time chatting to you. We look forward to welcoming you to the Northwest in Derry on Friday, on Green on December the 14th. Still some tickets available. And as I say, this show's been praised wherever it's played. And I'm sure you're going to have a fantastic reaction up here. Have a wonderful
day.
Bye. Take care of yourself. Okay, there you go. That is on Green On Theatre, December 14th, 8 p.m. And as I say, some of the reviews, talented, confident and phenomenally quick-witted. That's Chortle. That's the comedy bible in Britain. Wacky, original, must-see, the New York Times. Genius, kill to get a ticket, the Scotsman. A world-class act, Sunday Times UK. And the last ever performance of How to Get the Menopause and Enjoy It takes place in On Green On Theatre on December 14th at 8 p.m. And it's being filmed, which I'm sure it will make it part of a special down the line. All right, that's where we have to leave this special 9 till noon show. They're all special, aren't they? Thank you so much for all of your time. We're going to be back tomorrow morning with the Friday panel. That's entertainment and all the usual fun games and conversations. Stay right where you are, though. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest after the news at 12. Have a great day, everyone.